Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, Lions big winners this past Sunday in Lambeau Field for the third straight year, defeating the Green Bay Packers 24-14 in the rain and the wind, and it wasn't super cold, but it's a nice victory.
The game was not even as close as the score would indicate either. Like, it was very firmly in control the throughout, in my opinion. They took control with the first opportunity they got the ball. I mean, like, you stop them on the first drive, you get the ball, and you take control of the game, and it felt like the game was over by the time the fourth quarter rolled around. And I know it looks like a 10-point game, but it felt like it could have been 100, because I felt supremely confident where the Lions were going into that final quarter. They had just a grasp on everything. It was a very nice feeling to walk into Lambeau for the third year in a row and get the win. It's unusual, but I'll take it.
Tight game till late in the first half, and then a kind of, you know, a terrible Jordan Love pass, but really puts the Lions in control. And like you said, by the time the fourth quarter comes, the Lions were dominating. The fans were loving it. They were making their way down, you know, as close to the field as possible,
right,
as they have been the last couple of years. You know, another big test coming up this Sunday in Houston against the Texans. So we'll be talking about that in a few minutes. There's a lot of big stuff happened this week. This big trade deadline came and went on Tuesday, and the big move was trading for the Cleveland Browns' Za'Darius Smith.
This was the guy that we had talked about previously. This is a guy that I wrote about previously. The rumors all centered around him. Most of the writers seemed to point to him as being the guy that made the most sense. And I don't think it was overly surprising that it ended up happening. He's the perfect combination of athleticism and strength. He's got that veteran leadership. He can set the edge. There's just a plethora of things that he can do that fits perfectly into the line system. And so the cost was cheap, financially, and what you had to give up to get him. And so you have the option to keep him for the year, or you can keep him under contract next year as well if you want. Just have to take on some bonuses. But it's just overall, it made a ton of sense, and it's not surprising it got done, but they sure made us wait, didn't they? Cleveland really wanted that fourth rounder, and Brad Holmes didn't want to part with it. So I feel like I've written and talked about this plenty. I'm interested in your thoughts. Satisfied with Za'Darius, or did you want more? Did you want a higher level player? Did you want him like go all in? What's your opinion?
Well, of course, if you could have gotten a higher level player, you'd love it. But the reality was they weren't going to get Myles Garrett because of the dead cap that would be involved for the Browns. Like they'd have no reason to trade him away. And it's not a similar situation with Max Crosby, but it certainly seemed like the Raiders weren't interested in dealing him. The Lions probably did just about as well as they could do. Yeah, like, so that there's plenty of reason to be pleased with Smith. He's got 5 sacks on the year so far, which, you know, I don't, that's got to put him in the top 10. I should have looked at that.
Oh, but, his sacks are up pretty high. His pressures are really good as well.
Similar as well.
He's
3-time Pro Bowler.
He's not going to take much to get him on the field quick. And so, I'm excited. Now, my follow-up question for you is, while it would have been nice to have gotten a better player, were you willing to sacrifice those higher level picks to get that bigger player? Or do you like the route that they went as far as like spending?
Well, as far as we might've talked a little bit about this last week, I would be totally fine if they would have given up more to get a better player, because you know, Holmes likes having the draft picks, but at the same time, he knows what he's doing. So what's the big deal if he gave up higher draft picks for a more talented player? But then there's the issue of, and you know, we want just the best team possible, period. But the issue is, if they traded for a higher level guy, they would want to pay to keep him, especially if they were shelling out a lot of, you know, draft pick capital to do so, because now you have less opportunity to get other you know, frontline players. So if you trade for this guy, you want to keep him, and now are you forcing other guys out, you know, at the same time. Whereas Smith, if they do like Za'Darius Smith, they'd they'll be able to re-sign him at a, you know, a lower number than one of these big name guys would get, and it's working out. I think it's probably the best move. Smith's tied for 17th in the league in sacks with 5.
So his contract in he is under contract for next season, but the way it works is he has a roster bonus that triggers in March. So the Lions can keep him, and they can just, you know, keep his contract as is. But when that roster bonus triggers, it bumps the salary. It almost like doubles the salary. It goes from like $5 million to like $10 million or something like that. So they could also restructure his deal to try and get a lower cap number. Or because if they want, they can release him before the bonus triggers. And they can, and if they release him, there's no dead cap at all. So they have a couple options on how they can work with him moving forward. And I think they'll want to see how everything plays out before they make that decision. So in the short term though, great move. Going to make them, much stronger for the stretch run. And, you know, it should make them a better team come playoffs.
Say he'll probably, the feeling is he's going to also fit the roster very well.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
As far as personality wise. But then I think almost any player they would bring in here, like, you know, they'd have to fit in. Like, it's one of the best teams in the league. Like, they really have no choice but to fit in. Like, they're not going to come in and become like the number one guy on the team. You know,
right.
They're walking into a room with a lot of high end talent who are kind of in charge of the team. You know, the leadership of this team is set in stone.
He goes to sleep on Monday on a 2-7 team. And he's one of the, you know, main guys in the locker room, and he wakes up the next day on a 7-1 team and, doesn't have to be one of the main guys, but will be a veteran presence. And, you know, it's gotta be nice. He also had a bye week. He was set to have a bye week as well
that,
this week.
That was one thing. Yeah, I was going to bring that up to you. So he's practiced. Today's Thursday. Correct. He's practicing tomorrow, Friday, right? Campbell gave him a couple of days to handle whatever he had to handle in Cleveland or wherever he lives. And then he's going to potentially play on Sunday. Probably not going to get a ton of snaps, but who knows? I say that now, and he's going to have like 40 snaps on Sunday night. But are they going to eventually give? I mean, I guess they would if they're locking up a one seed or whatever. But now he's got the potential to play in 18 games instead of 17. Yes. And I mean, if Smith's all right with that, that's fine. But at the same time, it's like, what if he gets hurt too? There's another one on the, which is a possibility no matter what.
But
that's for any player. But you think they would? I was kind of surprised. Be like, oh, I wonder if they'll just let him have the week off because he does need a bye. You would think he needs a bye week.
I the way that they treat their veterans by giving them like Wednesdays to rest, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he got that treatment where they're like, hey, we're going to give you a Wednesday. Next Wednesday, we'll give you the offer, whatever, right? Like, maybe it'll be a month before they start giving him those Wednesdays off because they want him, you know, to be part of the installs and stuff like that as he acclimates. But I definitely think he's going to be a guy that gets the veteran treatment as the season progresses. So great fit. I think it's going to solve some problems for the Lions and make a defense that is playing well even better.
I would agree. So it's a good move by the Lions. There's no doubt about that. And also the other thing, like nobody better than him got traded.
Correct.
So he was the best edge player that got traded, you know, so that plays a factor too. It's not like anybody else was able to go out and get anybody better. All right.
Yep.
Next big acquisition for the Lions this week is the return of wide receiver Jameson Williams after his 2-game suspension for banned substances and maybe a looming suspension for the loaded gun, but it doesn't at this point. It's not so.
Correct.
He'll be back, and it'll be great to have him back. They've proved they could win without him. Anybody who might have concerns, like, man, they really could use him. They can. They could have really used him over the last 2 weeks, but they were able to get by without him. Really, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a dynamic weapon, and he makes the offense just that much more dangerous. At the same time, the Lions are built to beat you 7 different ways, and so if you're missing one of those ways and you only have 6 ways to beat a team, that's still plenty of options to work with. So it's nice to have him back there. The teammates have been awfully supportive. The coaching staff has been awfully supportive. He's been appreciative of that. He's spoken with the media already, and he's ready to move forward. And so
just don't do anything dumb the rest of the year.
Jeez, please, please. Right. Yeah. So, it's going to open things up a little bit. This is the Houston defense is a defense that we've seen before. They're going to run, you know, some zones. They're going to run some high safeties. And so whenever you have a team that runs some high safeties and you have someone that can run them off, it just opens things up and makes things easier on everybody underneath. And he'll be able to bring that to the table again.
And also, what are your thoughts about missing him on Sunday? His speed, you know, is his biggest weapon. But
yes,
the field was all slick. Goff's wearing 2 gloves on his hands. Like would he have been a ton of use in Green Bay? But maybe he would have. You know, he could have slipped past the defenders. You know, like it doesn't matter. Like what the weather is.
Yeah, I think the weather and the game plan was basically just to play the underneath ball and let your guys yak it. And so,
but that's something he could do as well.
Yeah. And I think there's a benefit to being an offensive player with speed versus a defensive player that has to react to that. Especially when you play on wet surfaces. And so, you know where you're going to cut. So you can take a little extra caution in making that cut, whereas the defender has to react and they have to be more deliberate. And it doesn't always, it makes it harder to make the cut sharply, I guess. And so I think on wet surfaces, speed and speed is always good to have on offense because it just gives you a little bit of an edge. But they, their game plan was play controlled, take what's there and just can, move down the field and score. And so they did that for most of the game. And, I think JMO would have opened things up a little bit more, but they still find ways to win.
It's a nice detail, although moot, because the Lions won't head back outside until a couple of days before Christmas. So they will be on turf all the way till then. So it's good to have Williams back and, even more depth on offense, and an offense that's been pretty good over the last couple of weeks anyways. All right. Isaiah Williams, wide receiver, has been waived, which is a little – now, to me, just sitting there seeing it's a little surprising. He had a nice 36-yard kickoff return against the Packers, and he played a little bit in that game, but this was a guy they liked, and I don't know, maybe he just had to get waived because of the moves they needed to make for the 53-man roster to make everything work.
Yeah, there's a pending move that they're going to make, and they're waiving him now, likely in anticipation to try and get him through waivers so they can get him on a practice squad. The issue here is we don't exactly know what their move is, but I think we could speculate what it is. In my mind, it's probably to make room for Shane Zylstra. They've activated Shane Zylstra or elevated Shane Zylstra from the practice squad each of the last 3 weeks. and he's now out of elevations. And so they needed room on the active roster in order to elevate him again to continue his role as a tight end three. And they probably were going to dip into either the receiving group or the offensive line group, and they opted with the receiving group. Now they're hoping to be able to sneak him to onto their practice squad, but you know, he was a popular guy. You know, he was a guy that got drafted by the UFL, or was it USFL? Which one is it now? I always forget which one.
Now it's the UFL.
UFL. Thank you. So he was drafted by them. So, you know, he's a guy that's definitely on teams' radars. And so it'll be interesting to see if he ends up getting claimed, keeping in mind that if he gets claimed, someone has to put him on their 53. So,
yeah, but if you're a bad team, why not? Especially if they're having depth issues at receiver. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's very possible he gets claimed, but we'll see.
Defensive lineman Chris Smith was re-signed to the practice squad.
Yeah, so he got signed to the active roster on Saturday. Yep, played, and then got cut, and then he's back on the practice squad. Basically, it's a logistical gymnastics just to find a way to get him. Because of injury, they needed to elevate four players. Two of them went the traditional elevation route. Two of them had to be signed and then later cut and then re-signed back to the practice squad. Chris Smith being one, Abraham Beauplan being the other. And both of them went through that process over the weekend and then at the beginning of the week. But they're both back on the practice squad, which is where they were a week ago when we talked when we were talking about them. So if you weren't paying attention to what happened with the Lions in between our podcasts, you wouldn't even have known unless we brought it up, because they went through all three phases in like 5 days. So thus is the life of players. You know,
the bottom 60. Of the 53 man roster. Yeah, between 50 and I guess 51 and 60 on the roster.
Right. Yep. These are just part of what happens.
All right. Injury report. This is information coming from both Wednesday and Thursday. Left tackle Taylor Decker shoulder injury, not listed on Wednesday, but then limited on Thursday.
So they held a walkthrough on Wednesday, which adds a little element of trickiness here in being able to ascertain what injury the depth of these guys' injuries. For example, if he showed up Wednesday and it was a traditional Wednesday and he ends up having a shoulder injury, we're not going to think much of it. And then if he was limited, we'd be like, okay, he's limited Wednesday, and you know, he'll work his way towards the game. Because they held a walkthrough, all injury reports are just estimations. So he was estimated to have been fine on Wednesday, and then he shows up on Thursday, and now all of a sudden he has a shoulder issue. Now, what we don't know is, was the shoulder issue a pre-existing issue that it was, you know, we would have just viewed similarly to, like, it was, if we saw it on a Wednesday, like, oh, it's just something he's going to work through. Or was it he got hurt at practice today and then he could now be in trouble and possibly miss the upcoming game? We don't know which way it is. And because we haven't talked to Dan Campbell yet, we're just speculating. So it could really be either one. If he practiced Wednesday and then showed up as limited on Thursday, we'd be like, oh, it's a midweek injury. We'd know he was going to be in trouble. Just like Mekhi Wingo last week, hurt his ankle on a Thursday, didn't play. But because of this walkthrough and because all of Wednesday's information was estimates, we really don't know when this injury occurred with Decker. Therefore, we don't know, will it keep him out of the game or not? So unfortunately, we don't have an answer. And so we're going to have to go in just knowing that we're just not 100% sure what this means for this weekend's game.
It's a bad sign if he won't be available, but
sure.
That's the outcome. Like, it would be Dan Skipper would replace him.
Yeah.
Or would they move See, who would know now? I mean, with Decker being healthy, remember last year would be Sewell would move over to left tackle.
Right.
Maybe they wouldn't even do that now.
It's possible. I think I could see them going a couple different ways. I could see them. excuse me. I could see them shifting Sewell and then
Sorestall at right tackle, and then you use Skipper how you usually use him.
Right. Or I could see them. If it was a midweek injury and they'd already done two full practices with Sewell at right, they may just say, hey, we have to leave him and then play Skipper at left and then just keep a tight end on his side. Mm-hmm. And that's the tricky part with this is we don't exactly know what the fallout is going to be because they haven't had to cross this bridge yet.
All right, running back Sione Vaki, knee injury, full practice Wednesday or Thursday. He missed the game last Sunday.
It was weird last week. Didn't practice Wednesday, practice in full on Thursday, didn't practice on Friday, then missed the game. He's been in full all week, which means he's probably on the right path to play. Should be really important for special teams purposes because he's been really good.
You can have a fake punt set up for him on Sunday Night Football. All right.
That'd be great.
Defensive lineman Josh Pascal, illness, full practice Wednesday, Thursday. Turns out that was a cancer scare, right?
Yeah. So, excuse me. So he had cancer back in 2018, which I know we've talked about before, and he has annual cancer checkups, and he goes in for one of his annual checkups, and they find a mass in his shoulder. Now, his previous cancer was in his foot, but obviously they're still concerned, and so they biopsy, and they decide that they need to remove it. It's a non-cancerous mass, and so they feel comfortable with it, but they still feel like they need to remove it ASAP just in case. Mm-hmm. And because of that, he takes a little bit of time to rehab. He needs to get his strength back in his shoulder in order to be, in a safe spot where he can play safely. And he thought he might be able to come back for last week's game. But he just wasn't gaining the strength fast enough. Lions didn't want to risk his health. And so they rested him another week. Now he's back practicing in full. He feels like he's ready to go. He said he's ready to go. Campbell said he's ready to go. And so I would anticipate him jumping right back in the starting lineup.
Defensive lineman Mekhi Wingo, ankle injury, full practice on Wednesday and Thursday. The defensive line starting to get a little healthier.
Yeah, and so Wingo, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, got hurt last Thursday after we recorded and then couldn't practice on Friday, couldn't play in the game. But now we are a full week away from that injury, and so he is back to healthy. And he should be able to return back to his kind of rotational role. It'd be interesting to see if he still gets snaps on the outside. They've been, they used him outside a couple weeks ago quite a bit and then kind of scaled that back, kept him inside a little bit more recently. And, he's got that flexibility. And I think that gives the Lions, some options, which is, it'd be nice to have that back again.
Linebacker Malcolm Rodriguez, ankle injury, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, it's starting to look like he's not going to be back. The initial thought was he would potentially be back for this week. Now it's starting to look like he's not. Even if he did return on Friday, would he be ready to go after not practicing, the five previous practices? I would say no. Typically, the Lions don't push guys like that. And so I think at this stage, you can pretty much anticipate he's not going to play.
Linebacker Jalen Reeves-Maben, neck injury, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. He did play on Sunday.
Yeah, he played, got hurt, and then came back and played through it. Then they rested him Wednesday, and then they rested him again on Thursday. So I do think his situation is a little different than Malcolm's because he did play more recently than Malcolm, so the reacclimation shouldn't be terribly challenging. So if he returns to practice on Friday, I would expect him to play on Sunday. If he does not, obviously, then he won't. But you know, if they're down a couple of linebackers, that's a position group they have plenty of depth at, and realistically, where they'll feel him is lost the most would be on special teams. But if you're returning Bakke, that's a huge upgrade. And then you keep Strickland, who's usually a healthy scratch. You keep him in there, and shouldn't be too massive of a drop off. You should be able to keep doing what you're doing well.
Is this push like, no, Nowaski probably wouldn't start, right? Or would he with these
Yeah, he
injuries?
would. Yeah, I think he would, because so against Green Bay, they started with,
Played a bit.
yeah, they played Campbell and Alex almost 100% of the time for both of them. And then Reeves may have been started the game as the third linebacker. And then when they shifted their design, when they realized the Packers were going to run more, they ended up shifting away from Jalen and went over to Nowoski. And I believe Nowoski ended up having more opportunities. He saw more snaps than Reeves may have been by the end of the game. So I do fully expect Nowoski to be the starter at that third linebacker spot if both those guys are out. Even if Jess Malcolm's out, I still kind of expect Nowoski to be that kind of third guy that would put Ben Neiman in as kind of linebacker four. And then, you know, maybe I don't think they really would need to turn to a linebacker five, but they may turn, you know, to their safeties for a little bit more coverage linebacker duties.
It's crazy how deep their linebackers are. Where
Right.
now you're on your sixth, seventh line, and there's no drop off.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right. Started injury evaluation clocks on both cornerback Emmanuel Mosley and safety Ifeanyi Melifonwu. So Melifonwu, there's another pass rusher getting back.
Right. And so they're both nickel options, right? I think I'm sorry, Mosley can challenge Robertson for some snaps. He's a guy who I think can really push. He can give you some rotational snaps at nickel. He can also give you some rotational depth outside. And then Melifonwu is a guy who you again can line up in the slot and blitz out of that slot. So talk about a pass coverage linebacker that's, you know, tailor suited for Melifonwu in a lot of ways. So I don't think they're going to be back necessarily this week, but I expect them to be back in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And so you add Broderick Martin, who's now completed almost 2 weeks of his injury evaluation, so he could be coming back as well. And man, it's just like, you're just guy after guy after guy. You're starting to get back and starting to get healthy, and you're upgrading your depth hand over fist right now over the next couple of weeks.
Good to have options, especially with the losses they've taken over the last several weeks on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, they've got essentially like three defenders that they could return in the next 3 weeks, and then they're returning two from injury this week. And then you add the Za'Darius Smith trade in, and man, that's six defenders that you're adding almost exclusively for depth purposes, except for, you know, Za'Darius, of course.
Do they talk about John Kaminsky at all?
If he returns, it's going to be playoffs. It's
Okay.
not as close as they had originally hoped. It's looking like a January return if he is able to at all.
Right. Let's do a little review with Packers here. You mentioned it earlier how, you know, that score is 24-14, but it really wasn't that close. You know, you didn't get a feeling that the Lions were in any type of danger. They did get outgained again, just like they did in the Titans game, but you know, that's due to circumstance. You know, like Lions, they set themselves up with good field position again, and they did a couple of long drives in there, but you know, they've been putting themselves in such good positions the last couple of weeks where it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, for both weeks, by the time the fourth quarter rolled around, they were basically like, let's just run the clock out and get out of here. You know, at by the end of the third quarter, start of the fourth quarter, I was watching how long these drives were, and these drives were like 4, 5, 8 minutes long. And it was just massively long time of possession on the drives. And when the Lions got up 3 scores and they were going into the fourth quarter with 3 scores, I looked over at Laura and I'm like, this game's over. Like, they might get 2 more possessions and they're down 3 scores. Like, unless something drastic happens, like they throw a pick six or fumble or something, this game might be a wrap. And that's when they just started running the ball and just trying to keep the clock out. And sure enough, a couple of 4-minute drives, plus the Packers, they needed extended drives because they couldn't get big chunks the way they wanted to. And yeah, Lions just bled the clock. They allowed that touchdown, but it was really garbage time touchdown. Like, that game was really 24/7 for the majority of the game. Or was it 24/10, or I guess it would have been, whatever it was.
24/7. Yeah, it was
Oh,
20.
yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they had the 2-point conversion, didn't they?
Not
Yeah, it was like,
seven. It
yeah.
was 24-6. That's
Six.
right. And
Thank you.
then, yeah,
Thank
that
you.
24/7. It was 24-6. Yeah, before they scored that touchdown and then got the 2 point.
And so, like, when it's 24/6 and you're looking at only a couple more possessions, it was like, great. Like, it was,
Where are the Packers going to get
I had
18
nowhere to,
points?
yeah, there was no way. There was no way they were going to score 18 points. That pick that Love threw was almost just a dagger. Like, that's a pick he absolutely cannot make. And then to allow Kirby to score, it just brutal. Just a brutal
Yeah, but
throw.
the game wasn't, I was kind of surprised because like it did take a lot of wind out of their sails, but
Yeah.
the game wasn't over yet. You know, they still could have came back from that.
Sure, they could have, but the way they were playing, they just looked like to me, they looked like they were just getting outbullied. They were dropping passes left and right. They were slipping. They didn't look prepared. They were getting out physical. It was just, they just got beat up. And they didn't look, it wasn't like Tennessee, where it was like Tennessee, who was just looking to get out of Dodge. This was a team that didn't look like they just didn't want to, they didn't look like they thought they could win, in my opinion. Like,
Yeah,
they
I don't
just,
know.
in my opinion, and maybe you can disagree, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are yelling at the radios disagreeing with me as well.
We're not
But,
on the radio, Eric.
well,
It's
but they,
2024.
if you listen to your car, you know what I mean? It's a radio. Or
Oh,
if you
no,
listen to
that's
your
fair. Oh,
headphones.
no, I'm picturing somebody sitting there listening to their radio. Maybe in
The
a 1930s style, the stand-up radio,
kids in front of it
Yeah,
laying
there's a
on their
fire in
bellies
the
with their
fireplace.
hands up and knees
Yep.
kicked up. Yeah, I didn't, it was one of those games where I didn't have much doubt throughout the whole thing.
Packers second to last drive with the fourth and one stop, right? Very
Yeah.
nice stop, Jack.
Jack
Jack
Campbell.
Campbell. Yeah, it was Jack
Yes.
Campbell. The Packers should have kicked it there. And I know people like, because it wasn't over. Get your points while you can. It's raining out and everything. Get the points there. Get to 9. They score. I mean, they still were kind of done, but like that kind of like screwed them because they still were down 3 scores. Instead of 18 points is any way you can get it. 3 points plus 8 points plus 7 points. Like they should have gotten 3. Then they would have gotten the 8 later. Then they would have been onside kicking to try to tie the game. Hindsight's 2020. We're Dan Campbell fans, whereas we're like, oh, of course you go for it at fourth and one at the 9, but you did have 3 scores to make up, and here is points, right? Here's 3 points for
Yeah.
you right away. I don't know. It's just
He
me.
the Matt LaFleur is a good coach who adapts, understands his personnel, knows how to call a game, but his in-game decision making versus Dan Campbell, he's always on the wrong end of it. Like, always. Like, he's aggressive when he doesn't need to be aggressive. He's passive when he should be aggressive. And it's all out of whack. Like, it's almost like he doesn't know what to do. Like, going, like, only settling for, having an 8-minute drive and only settling for 3 points on that opening drive, that's when I knew they're in trouble. Like, if you're going to be aggressive, you got to be like, you got to get that in the end zone. You got to find a way. You got to add a trick play. You got to do one of those sure things, rub plays, a little fake block by the tight end, the leak. Like, you got to do something where you know you're going to get a first to keep that drive going. And they just couldn't. And when they couldn't punch that in on that first drive, that's when I knew it was going to be a Lions type of day, because LaFleur just time after time does not make the right call when it comes to when to be aggressive and when not. And I don't know what it is, but like, did you see the clip of him getting frustrated on the sideline and swearing at when Dan Campbell went for it on fourth and one with Jahmyr Gibbs, and Jahmyr scores the touchdown. And then they pan to LaFleur, and he says an expletive across the sidelines towards the Lions sideline. Like, he just seems uncomfortable when it comes to making the right decision. And maybe I'm being too critical, but this is 3 years in a row that I've seen this. And it's
also handily beaten them in Ford Field on Thanksgiving Day, though.
Yeah. that one time.
Right. I don't know. Dan doesn't have his number.
No.
He didn't coach a great game on Sunday. If you're a Packers fan, you wouldn't be happy with him. Yeah.
And I'm saying, like, this is more often than not. Like, he had a great game plan. That's Thanksgiving Day game. That was as great of a game plan to beat the Lions as I've seen. The other five times they faced off, I just feel like he's made a lot of wrong decisions. And so, you know, and he's not the only coach. He's not the only coach that does that. You know, I think there's legitimately coaches that are scared of the type of decisions they'll have to make when they play Dan Campbell, because they know Dan's going to be aggressive, and they know the Lions have the skill players to execute the aggressiveness. And I think he knows these teams come in and they know they have to change how they play. And I don't think they feel comfortable with that. Like, they play the way they play because that's where they're comfortable. When you have to dial up the aggression and you're not comfortable with the aggression, you get hesitant and you make wrong decisions.
Coach is losing psychological matchups with Dan Campbell.
Who would have thought, right?
Who would have thunk it? Nobody would have thought that back in 2021.
Can we go back and talk about Jack Campbell for a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Jack, big fourth down stop.
Yeah. He's really been an ascending player for the Lions. And it's a guy that I think hasn't been getting a ton of love. And I've tried to give him his flowers a little bit more this week. But he has just steadily been getting better and better and better. If you are a believer in PFF, which historically is pretty harsh on grading linebackers, he's doing very well. He has, through the Lions' eight games, his PFF grade is 80.1 overall, which is, I don't think I've ever seen a Lions linebacker at 80, ever. It puts him at ninth amongst all linebackers, fifth amongst starting linebackers. His run defense is 79. His coverage grade is 75. His tackling grade is like in the high 70s as well. I don't have that number written down. They're all top 10. And this is a guy who is like, he's top 10 run defense, top 10 pass coverage, top 10 tackling, which basically puts him in he's one of the top five linebackers in the NFL right now. And that's a pretty impressive ascension from where he was a year ago when his coverage grade was like 132nd or something ridiculous like that. Mm-hmm. Now he's fourth, and it doesn't, he's getting better, right? Like I don't think he's at his ceiling. He's a guy that continues to improve. Everything's very quiet. His snaps have been going up. His production's been going up. His impact has been going up. And he's just so athletic and so strong that we've been kind of like, the missing piece was just the experience and the instincts. You know, like, when's everything going to kind of click? It's starting to click right now, and we're starting to see this combination of a freaky athlete with good instincts and who's incredibly strong, and the production is paying out right now, and it's awfully impressive. And now you're looking at that 2023 draft class and saying, man, Gibbs and now Campbell and Branch and LaPorta, and you're just like, how in the world did they get all four of those guys? It's that class is looking very strong.
An embarrassment of riches, and we talked about that with Campbell over the last, because you know he was disappeared. I shouldn't say disappeared. He never appeared like throughout last year. And sure, we talked about those. Yeah. He's going to get better. He's going to get better. Just taking time with him for whatever reason. And now it's happening, and he is only 24, like you were saying. So mm-hmm. he hasn't reached his apex yet, and maybe he starts to get there in the playoffs. And if not, it'll be next year. I don't know, you could even argue the year after; he'll only be 26 in 2 years. But yeah, he's been solid, and I wonder what'll happen now. Anzalone, how long is his contract? You know, there for mm-hmm. is he a guy they're going to walk away from eventually? And start going with younger guys, you know, draft more younger guys, and mm-hmm. Campbell's your guy. And I don't know I don't know what's going to eventually happen. You know, but right. You kind of look at what this team's going to do in the future because, yeah. You know, the salary cap's filling up. You have all these young players that need to get paid. Like, how are they going to make this all happen? How are they going to keep this team together as long as possible?
Yeah, with Anzalone, he signed this year and next.
That's right. And, so it's a 3-year deal, right? When mm-hmm. they kept them.
Yep. And then I think if he's coming back after that, it's going to be discounted because he's going to be over 30, maybe over 31. And it will be Jack Campbell's team at that point. Jack is, I think by next year, he's going to be the primary focus. You're really the first decision you're going to make is with Derek Barnes, who's on an expiring contract yeah. now. And then
the Lions are lucky he got hurt. And, okay. And if then, you're talking contract wise, you're trying to win yeah. the Super Bowl. You'd rather have him on the field and
absolutely.
Command $10 million a year because he played so great. But
Malcolm is signed through 2025 on his rookie deal still. And so you have one decision to make with Barnes. And then you have a full another season before you have to another couple decisions with Malcolm and Anzalone. And, you know, maybe they draft another guy and just add them to the fire and see what happens, because there will be some turnover at some point, but they got a lot of luxuries, and the majority of their linebacking core is signed for at least 2 more years.
It's one thing we really haven't talked about this year. We even talked about stuff like this a bit last year, is what are they going to need in the draft? What are they going to have to do?
Sure.
Like, we haven't talked about that at all this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think most people kind of know, like,
used to be the whole basis of the show, like the first 3 years.
That's true. That's yeah. very true. Yeah. I mean, we'll get to that stuff.
In the off season. Hopefully yeah. in February sometime.
Yeah. I mean, beyond edge rusher, there's not really a glaring need. Maybe offensive line, but you're investing for the future at this point. Now, that's what the draft is. It's what do we want later? And it's going to be really interesting to dissect this team as it progresses, because you're going to have to factor in things like, oh, the Lions have 3 developmental offensive linemen that they've invested draft picks in that they think, you know, have a high level of capability, yet none of them have even really played yet this year. And Sorsdell, Manu, and Mahogany. And, like, these are guys that could push for starting jobs in a year or two. And if they develop the way that they're expected to, and, you know, is that a pattern? You know, do we start watching for that more? And it's just, there's so many layers to this roster right now. And it's such a deep roster that when it comes time to break it down, it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be a lot of layers to it too.
All right. We pretty much covered everything we wanted to about the Packers.
Yeah.
We have one more, the one more note you have written down here, bend, don't break defense, which,
yeah,
you know, that's the exact, and kind of hit on it a little bit by taking field goals instead of trying to score, at least LaFleur's decision-making.
Yeah.
But the Lions, you see it a lot, you know, when you start getting frustrated with them at all, it's like, oh, God, they're giving up yards. But at the same time, it's like, no, they're just bend, don't break. When they get inside the red zone or when they get inside the 30-yard line, they really start tightening up defensively, and where their man coverage and everything, it all just starts tightening down as they get closer. So defense has been great.
I think the last couple weeks,
even though the stats haven't shown it, the defense has played really well.
I was just going to say, I do think it was very even more exaggerated, the bend don't break this game, because it was with the inclement weather, with the style of offense that the Packers run. I think that was very purposeful to get into situations where they were going to force the Packers to, settle for field goals instead of, getting into spots where they could score. Lions defense, by the way, since you brought up in the red zone, they only allow a touchdown on 43% of red zone trips by their opponent. So they only give up a touchdown 43% of the time. That's fourth best in the NFL. Like the point you made about them tightening up in the red zone, it's really true. That's a real strong suit of theirs.
All right. Let's start talking about the Texans. Lions favored by 3.5, which is, so this nationally televised game, it's Sunday Night Football and the highest rated game of the week on the road against a good team, a team with a 6-3 record, a good team, a Super Bowl contender in the AFC. Lions favored by 3.5 games Sunday night, 8:15 on NBC.
NBC.
All right. Okay. All right.
I wrote down Amazon because
am I missing something here?
No, I was thinking about tonight's game. That's my fault. No, it is NBC. Yep. Mike Tirico, that crew, right?
Yeah. Tirico, my Chris fault. Collinsworth, Melissa Stark down on the field. No, you didn't actually have to say. We could have gone past this without anybody knowing.
That's okay.
But I was
am
I missing? So are they doing special on Sunday?
It's me. I got too many. I was doing too many
too
things.
Too many
at
irons
once.
In the fire. Referees Bill.
No, go ahead.
Referees Bill Vinovich, 24th season, 21st. Oof. As a ref, going all the way back to the early 2000s, 12.13 penalties per game, which is under the average of 13. 13, it's high. Last year, the average was in the 11s by now, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Penalties are a little high this season.
It dropped last year as the season went on. It's been hovering, it was like 12.5 and then it was over 13. And that's kind of, then it was back a little bit below 13. Now it's back up to 13. It's been a little, the average has been interesting to watch because, and I think if you watch some of these games, you see it. Like some of these games, you have a handful of penalties, and then other games, it's like, oh my gosh, you're throwing a penalty every other play, yeah. Right? It's just, it's hard to watch. And so I don't think there's necessarily like every game you're getting 13 penalties. It's because some of these teams that can't execute, their games are hard, and we've been there. I mean, we've seen Lions teams that get like 25 penalty flags thrown in a game and stuff like that. Those games brutal. Are so hard. Yeah, there's no flow. They're hard on the fans as well. And but Vinovich is he the most seasoned referee? I feel like
I would
is.
Assume so. Yeah,
he's good. You shouldn't have any issues with him. It's nice to have a good, experienced, seasoned referee in a game that's a spotlight game with two teams that have, strong records.
You know, we used to, who were you dressed as for Halloween all those years
ago?
Ed Hockley era, there were like three or four refs that were like 20-year officials. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, yeah, 21 years as a referee, he's got to be the senior statesman. And there's probably not many guys that are close having the amount of experience he has. It, like, you used to
I
know.
Feel like, I was going to say, I feel like they all retired and then took TV analyst jobs.
Well,
Right?
that's the move.
Right.
You know what? When you talk about penalties, hammering on penalties, we didn't talk about Brian Branch. How do we leave out Brian Branch?
Oh, yeah.
I don't. There's been a lot of talk about him, and Branch
Sure.
came out and said, like, well, what he did was a penalty and he should have been ejected from this. So he's, I,
Well,
but,
he said he should have been penalized. He didn't
oh, he didn't.
actually
Okay.
address the ejection part of it, but he definitely said his target spot was too high and he needs to bring that target spot down.
Campbell's been
Which,
talking to him about that. Tom
yeah.
Brady, though, he wasn't really super sold that it was a pen. Or they, I think they were sold that it was a penalty, but definitely not ejection worthy.
Yeah, he was certainly sympathetic. And then, yes, he did not like that ejection. And I think the majority of national audience didn't think that that was an ejectionable penalty. Somebody wrote a great analogy and basically said the NFL is tends to be stricter when they know everybody's watching,
Yeah,
right?
well, it's fair. It was one of the highest rated games of the year. You know, there
Right.
was like 24.5 million viewers on Sunday afternoon. So I guess you make a good point.
But yeah, I didn't think it was ejectionable. I did think it was a penalty because of the way he made contact. I did think it was borderline. I also thought Branch tried to avoid. You can see Branch turn his head. You could see the Milton dip at the wrong time, and it's a hard target. But you know, eventually, essentially they said that they felt like he could have avoided the hit. At the same time, he's coming from behind the player, and for him, by the time he sees that the player drops the ball, he's already in flight, and so it's a tough call, tough break. It'd be nice to get his targets lower. But like the safeties coach said, if you go too low, you're starting to hit knees, and you don't want that either.
We only want to
Right?
bite knees. We don't want to hit
If
him in the knees.
see, and like that's the thing is like people like give Kirby all that crap because they're like, oh, he hits knees. Kirby hit thighs. It just and then the knees gave. You know what I mean? Like it was just it's such a small window, right? Because if you hit him in the thighs, you can. Their knee, if their foot's stuck in the ground, hit them in a thigh, their knees go. If you go above the hip into the, you know, you're risking losing them at their waist. If you hit them in the torso, that's where you're supposed to. And if you go a little too high, you hit them in the head. And so, like, they have such a small target window. And then you add in the fact that they're moving, contorting their bodies, trying to get the ball, falling to the ball. It's a tough spot. I said to Jeremy, if Milton makes that catch and Brian Branch hits him, that's a penalty, but not an ejection. Because he would have been trying to hit the you know a player with the ball. But the fact that Milton dropped the ball, that's when the whole he could have avoided it came into play, and that's why he got ejected. So really, if Milton makes that catch, Brian Branch is still playing, but the fact that he didn't means the league steps in.
And he doesn't dip like that. Brian Branch doesn't flip off the crowd, you know.
I tell you, his teammates really liked that.
Well,
He,
sure, everybody kind of likes that. Even the
oh
Packers
yeah,
fans kind of like that there's this animosity. Why, you know,
right.
the player shouldn't be doing it, but it's kind of fun when it happens.
he very much said he doesn't want that to be what people remember him for, which I totally get, and that totally fits his personality. At the same time, man, his teammates love it.
Sure.
I think fans love it too, because that people are going to put that on t-shirts. People are going to put that on, you know what I mean? Like it's going to become something that comes up for the whole rest of the year.
All right.
Couple of iconic photos came out of that game.
Yeah, with the upside down Amon-Ra St. Brown.
And the rain on Aaron
Yeah, the
Glenn's glasses.
glasses. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Texans, 6-3. Lost to the Vikings week 3, lost to the Packers week 7, lost to the Jets just last, well, on Halloween, right?
Yep, Thursday night, yep.
So, 6-3, DVOA, they're ranked 11th overall. Lions have ascended to number 1 overall. Lions offense is number 3 in the league. The Houston defense is number 2. Strength on strength. Passing game, the Lions are 11th. Houston 6th at defending the pass. Running the ball, Lions, of course, number 1. Houston 4th at stopping the run. Mm-hmm. Flipping it over the other way, Lions defense is 3rd overall. The Houston offense is struggling a bit at number 23. Lions are defending the pass 3rd best in the league. Surprised to see that. Houston down at 21 throwing the ball. Lions 9th at defending the run, which has been sagging over the last few weeks. Mm. Houston is offense 20th in the league at running the ball. Special teams, Lions are number 1. Of course, over the last 2 weeks has helped that out a lot. Houston's 10th.
The Lions' defensive passing DVOA has continued to rise, while the running game DVOA has continued to just dip just a little bit, little bit, little bit. But yeah, statistically, they are very efficient. And strength on one side of the ball. And the one area where you thought maybe Houston might be favored
would be really good. You would think that Houston would, I mean, coming into the season, you'd be like, okay, Houston offense will be number 6. You know, like they're going to be right near the top. CJ Stroud was early MVP candidate, you know, in his second year. And with Joe Mixon, like if they have good receiving core, even though like that's taken a hit over time. Yes, you would have thought Houston would be near the top.
Yep. And it's kind of flip flopped. And so it points to the Lions having another advantage. And, you know, I do think there's some opportunity here. On the defensive side of the ball to make some noise. So we'll get into that here in a bit. Anything else you want to add before we start breaking down the team?
Lions are 1-4 all time against the Texans. Won the first matchup way back in 2004, which I believe that'll be Houston's 3rd year in existence. They've lost the rest since. You know, they play once every 4 years. So it's not a rivalry that's got a lot of history to it, not a lore. Right. Maybe they start some on Sunday. I guess that's my only thing I wanted to add.
The only thing that stands out with Houston is that you've played them, what did you say, 6 times?
5. This will be the 6th time.
Okay. Of the 5 times you've played them, twice it's been on Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's right.
Which is interesting. And one of them was the Jim Schwartz
flags,
throw the challenge flag on a score thing
during the play.
Yep. And which was a penalty and means you couldn't review
it.
No. They changed that the next year because
of
they
Jim
were
Schwartz,
like
yeah.
Dumb Jim Schwartz. Yeah. They immediately changed that rule as soon as Jim found out, you know,
what
a mess. Yep. Yeah. And so a little bit of history, both things. But yeah, not a ton.
All right.
Want to start on offense?
No, okay, let's start. D'Amico Ryan's the head coach. You know, okay. Texans are lucky that they had D'Amico Ryan's as a player for drafted him. So and they were able to watch him throughout his career and make him a young head coach. And he's really turned the program around down in Houston. So that's a good hire by them. A lot of people questioned it at the time. Offensive coordinator Bobby Slowick. Now we can delve into the offense, unless you want to point out any interesting position coaches.
With Slowick, he went through the Shanahan coaching tree, just like D'Amico Ryans did. He started out as a defensive coordinator. I'm sorry, defensive analyst, just like D'Amico Ryans did. They joined Shanahan's staff the same year. There were 3 analysts hired. He was the one of them was Ryans, one of them was Slowick, one of them was another guy I don't remember. And they all learned underneath Saleh for 2 years, and then they flipped slow to the other side of the ball, where he could learn under Shanahan, and that's really when his offensive knowledge started to take off. He tries to model his offense off of Shanahan. So again, this is a common offense that we see right in the NFL. We've already seen a Shanahan offense or a version of the Shanahan offense with the Rams, Buccaneers, Vikings, Titans, and Packers. Like, all of those are descendants of the Shanahan West Coast scheme. And so this is another one. The thing with him, with Slowick, is he's got some flaws to his game. There's a lot of commonalities, like, you use both spread and bunch formations, you preset motion, crossers versus man routes, use a lot of 11 personnel, and then 12 personnel is usually your second go-to, and they spend like 95% in those two formations. They like to run outside zone. These are all common West Coast traits. One of the big differences, or one of the big flaws, in my opinion, is Slowick doesn't use play action like much at all, like 20% of the time, which is really low. And I think it's a big reason why they're struggling. With no play action, you're really not duping the linebackers. And by not duping the linebackers, you're just setting up CJ Stroud back there, to take pressure. And with the interior offensive line struggling the way that they are, and not a lot of play action, and not a lot of linebackers getting fooled, teams are sending blitzes, and the pressures are coming. And right now, they're giving up a massive amount of pressures. According to Next Gen, they've given up 151 pressures through their 9 games. That's the most in the NFL. They're giving up a pressure on 41% of their dropbacks, right? So it's almost every other dropback they're getting pressured, because their offensive line play is not doing well at all, and the offense in general isn't executing well. And I feel like Slowick isn't really calling game plans, or maybe isn't setting the game plans up very well for them as well. So that's big. Those factors are all reasons why they're sitting in the 20s in DVOA instead of, like you said, in the top like 6, right? So they're vulnerable. They've got a good talent all over the roster, but the talent isn't living up to, the billing on the offensive side of the ball. So you'll recognize the offense. Like I said, we've seen it in over half the game so far, but there's some things to it that just don't mesh. And it's a bit surprising that there's some of these missing pieces that Slowick hasn't instituted, and it's caused them some problems.
Quarterback, you've already mentioned him. I think I mentioned him too. CJ Stroud, last year's Offensive Rookie of the Year. Local fans that follow also college football know him well from Ohio State, who didn't perform well against Michigan, but did perform great in the college football playoff against Georgia in his last college game. Had a great rookie year, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Hasn't seen truly regret. All of his numbers are a little bit worse here in year two. Not big time worse, but it's like a tick worse everywhere. And you've pointed out the main reasons why. Part of it's the injuries to the receiving core. Part of it's the problems in the interior offensive line. He's just getting pressured too much, but he's rather capable.
Yeah, he certainly is, and he's athletic and mobile enough to, when he escapes the pocket, get chunk yards. But he's not a guy that you're necessarily designing runs for, right? Like, he's a guy who wants to stay in the pocket, and they have built their offensive line to protect him. But the middle is just, it's just leaky right now, and so he's getting pressure right in his face. It's causing him to have some happy feet. He's getting sacked. He's been sacked 31 times.
30 times, yep.
Yeah, that's second most in the NFL. Like, he's getting the pressure. He's not getting the ball out. Maybe it's either because of the longer developing routes, or or whatever the case is, just the pocket collapsing too quick. They struggled with the run game when Mixon was out. They've done better with it when Mixon has returned, but like the offensive line isn't helping them much there either. Like the stuffed rate for them is 21%, which is again like one of the worst in the league. I think it's second worst in the league. Stuffed rate is running the defensive line stuffing the run at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. That's happening on 21% of their run plays. So one out of every five run plays is getting basically tackled for a loss. And so again, they're just not getting push. There's not a lot of strength. The athleticism isn't working. Their technique isn't right. It's just the interior line is just getting kind of handled, and Stroud is really having to adjust on the fly. He's, like I said, he's capable, but everything has kind of been a tick down, a tick down, a tick down, and it's part of why they've lost two of their last three games, and why their efficiency scores are in the 20s instead of higher.
Running backs led by Joe Mixon also have Damian Pierce, Dari Ogbonnawale, and J.J. Taylor. They had Cam Akers traded and up to the Vikings, right, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Mixon gets the bulk of the work, and if he's healthy, we'll see him mostly.
Yeah, and Pierce is hurt. He hasn't practiced this week, and he's been out the last couple of weeks. So, and Pierce is actually a really good back, but him not being available will help. Mixon has a nice blend of power, athleticism, and then the vision to find a hole in the zone blocking, in the outside zone scheme that they run. And what I've noticed is when they run the stretch plays and he tries to find the hole on the front side of the run, the offensive line play doesn't block him enough holes and he gets shut down pretty quick. When he hesitates a little bit and he finds a backdoor opening and he finds the cutback lane, that's usually where he finds success on those outside runs. If that cutback lane gets sealed off, he's really going to have nowhere to go. And those outside zone plays are going to get shut down. But this again points to the interior offensive line just not getting to their spots and executing. The thing with Mixon is he's got good vision, but you can bottle him up. If you now shift away from the outside zone and you run more, if you run more traditional runs, he's been getting success by taking advantage of the edges when teams haven't been able to set a proper edge and he's been able to get outside jump cuts and make some shifts. But again, if you set the edge, you're going to bottle them up. And so the Lions have had a hard time in recent weeks setting the edge with some of the players they've had to put in those spots. I think getting Pascal back, if you get anything out of Za'Darius Smith, and maybe, you know, just you're able to add some of your higher level talent there instead of just, you know, leaning so much on your reserves, you set the edge a little bit better. And that's a huge key in order to bottle up their run game. Beyond Mixon, they haven't really had good success with either of their other backs outside of, like I said, Pierce, but he's likely not going to play. He hasn't practiced in a while.
Wide receiver group led by Tank Dell at this point with Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs, both on injured reserve. So you got Tank Dell, Xavier Hutchinson, Robert Woods, Sean Metchie III, and Steven Sims.
So Diggs is done for the year. It says he tore his ACL, non-contact ACL tear, and he's not going to be able to come back. So the talk was that Nico Collins, he's had a hamstring injury and he was out 4 weeks. The talk was he was going to be targeted, or he was targeting week 10 for his return. And with a hamstring injury, most people thought that would be fine. He was cleared medically at the beginning of the week to start practicing, but he hasn't started practicing and he hasn't practiced either Wednesday or Thursday. So here's a guy who hasn't played or practiced in a month and he hasn't practiced this week and he only has one more day to practice, he's not playing. Like I know there's a slim chance that he could practice and then they could just be like, you're gonna play. But like, you can't get one practice in a month and then all of a sudden be just ready to go. It's not realistic, right? So, and not in my opinion, if he plays, I'll be wrong here, but I feel pretty confident saying I feel pretty confident saying that I think he's not going to play. And with neither of those two guys available, it really puts a big chunk into their offense. It really scales them back quite a bit. And it's a part of the reason, again, a part of the reason why they've lost two of the last three games is because they haven't had those guys, those two big wide receivers available. Tank Dell's good. Tank Dell injured himself last year, and he's just now starting to return to form. But he can be a weapon with the ball in his hand. Little undersized, but very fast though. Michi's a guy who I think is better than what he gets credit for. Hutchinson is a guy. He's kind of like that, like a big outside guy. He had a really nice first game. It's kind of fallen off since. And then Robert Woods is older and not quite the Robert Woods we've seen in the past. We'll see a split of like Tank Dell will get like 75% of the snaps. Hutchinson, because he's an outside guy, gets about 75%. And then Michi and Robert Woods they'll each get 30 to 50 or something like that. And then you might get a few more leftover snaps for Sims, but it looked like a really deep unit that had seven wide receivers that were all, you know, capable of making the 53-man roster. But without those top two guys, it's a lot more palatable for the Lions defense. Tank Dell's going to do well. Like against the Lions scheme, playing a lot of man, Tank Dell will be a guy who gets separation and gets the ball. He'll do well against the Lions. The rest of them, I think they're going to have a lot harder time.
It's one of the weaker wide receiver groups they're going to face this season, but some of those weaker groups have had some success against the Lions. Mm-hmm. Tight ends, Dalton Schultz, Cade Stover, Teagan Quateranio. Schultz, we know well.
Yeah. They run 12 personnel about 35% of the time, which means they'll have two of these guys on the field. Thing is none of them have been playing very well. Schultz and Stover are their best options. They'll each play about 50% of snaps, and Schultz will probably play a little bit more than that, to be honest, but they're kind of underwhelming. Like they'll get the ball more as safety nets as opposed to like guys the play is designed for. They're more like afterthoughts. Like the progression of what Stroud's asked to do is he's looking to his receivers, and he's looking to his backs, and then he looks to his tight ends. It's not like they get a ton of opportunity, but you know, they've done okay. The problem is they're not all great blockers, and the production, like I said, is more of an afterthought than a primary focus.
Offensive line left to right, Laremy Tunsil, Jarrett Patterson, Juice Scruggs, Shaq Mason, Titus Howard.
So Tunsil's fantastic, right? Him and Howard are both very good offensive tackles. And for your pass game to work, you need tackles to be good in this scheme. So this scheme needs tackles to make the pass game go. They have good tackles. Pass game works. Kenyon Green is a first-round pick from 2 years ago. He's been a disaster. Kendrick Green, who's going to replace him, is equally a disaster. Both of them are amongst the worst guards in the NFL. Shaq Mason was a Pro Bowler not too long ago. He's playing very poorly. Juice Scruggs, another second rounder from a year ago, he's underperforming as well. The left guard, no matter who it is going to get chewed up by Alim McNeil and they're going to have to double team him. And if they double team him, that's going to put their tackles in one-on-ones. But like I said, they have good tackles. But then again, that also puts Shaq Mason in a very difficult spot as well. And then this is why teams start blitzing. if you get some interior push from your defensive tackles and they have to start doubling, you start blitzing and you're starting to get free blitzers, free rushers on Stroud. That turns into pressures, that turns into sacks, and that gets you off the field. So I would not be surprised to see the Lions get production out of the interior of their defensive line, plus dial the blitz up again against them as well.
All right, that's the Houston offense. Let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball. Matt Burke's defense.
Yeah, Burke is the guy who calls the plays. He is essentially calling D'Amico Ryans' defense, right? D'Amico Ryans is taking the defense that he learned in San Francisco under Robert Saleh, the Shanahan approach, the 4-2-5 defense, where you need really good cover linebackers. You're investing a ton of money in your front four. You're expecting your front four to do all the damage for you, and you don't like to blitz a whole lot because you expect your front four to get home, and typically they do. This is true of this defense as well. Their front four will get home, but what makes it a little bit unusual is that they actually have turned up their blitzing. In the past, they have only blitzed, I think like 20th% or something like that. Like they were right around like 20. This year, they're blitzing like 33%, which is quite a big jump in the frequency of them blitzing. But they use mostly sub packages, five defensive backs on the field almost all the time. They run about 70% of the time they're in zone, 25% of the time they're in man. They go 5% cushion for other stuff, but they run primarily a zone. So you're going to see cover one, cover three, just like you saw last week. The Packers defense comes from the same system, the same 49ers system that the Texans defense comes from. You just see things operated a little bit different. Schematically, they're going to look very similar. The difference is Houston's defense gets home. And we'll talk about that in a second. Now let's talk about now. Houston's defense gets home. They have really good pass rushers on the outside. They have the number one pressure maker and the number four pressure maker in the NFL, or pressure producer, I guess I should say. And they like to drop their linebackers. And when they drop their linebackers and they use their safeties, they end up putting seven in coverage. It makes smaller windows. You have to be more efficient with your throws. And they like to keep everything kind of in front of them. So when you're getting home with your guys up front, you're keeping things in front of you and you're making your tackles. All of a sudden, you're going to end up with a DVOA that makes you the second best defense in the league, right behind the Vikings. So it's going to be one of the better defenses, but at the same time, they have some injuries that they're going to have to deal with as well, and we'll get into those. One side note with Burke, do you recognize that name, Matt Burke?
No, well, was he was. Wasn't he the center of the Vikings? But that was Burke. That wasn't, well, it was spelled different.
I thought it was the same one too. That's what I thought at first. And then I realized, oh no, this is Matt Burke, who was Jim Schwartz's linebacker coach, who he brought with him to Detroit when he took over in 2009. So he was the Lions linebacker coach for 4 years, and 2009 to 2013.
So he was
So,
there on Thanksgiving when Jim
yes.
Schwartz threw the flag.
It all comes full circle,
Yeah,
right?
full circle.
Burke has an interesting history. Not a ton of experience in the Shanahan system. He's actually learned most of what he knows from Jim Schwartz, because he was with Schwartz in Tennessee before he was with
The
him in the,
wide
with the
nine.
Lions. Yeah, he will run that a lot of wide nine. So this is Shanahan's scheme with a wide nine element added into it. So it's going to be a little bit different than what we saw last week with the Packers, but on the back end, the coverage, all that stuff, that's going to look real familiar.
All right. Defense, Texans defense in the middle. We'll talk about defensive tackles. We'll move our way out. Follow Runsu Fadukasi and normally Mario Edwards Jr., but he's currently suspended. So you'll see Tim Settle along with Fadukasi and Kirk Heinisch coming in behind them off the bench. Now, the edge defenders, Will Anderson, who is hurt, right, and Danelle Hunter, those are usually your two edge rushers, with Derek Barnett, Denico Autry, and Dylan Horton coming off the bench.
Fadukazi has also been injured this week. He has not practiced at all. And so he is a potential miss, as well as Will Anderson, who has also missed each of the practices this week. Derek Barnett, Anderson's direct backup, didn't practice on Wednesday, returned in a limited form on Thursday. Autry is kind of a hybrid guy who moves between defensive tackle and defensive end. Horton is the guy who typically backs up Danielle Hunter. Fadukazi and Settle are underwhelming, in my opinion. I think you can run on them, and I expect the Lions to test it. I know this is a really good run defense, and that's because they have a lot of athleticism and talent, and their linebackers stay in spots where they can close. But if you start stretching the field and you start running play action, you can get linebackers to start second guessing their aggressiveness. And that's when you can then turn to the run and you can start trying to take advantage of this interior. You're not going to get a lot of pressure out of them. You're going to get most of your pressures off the edge guys. Hunter is leading the NFL per Next Gen in pressures with 57. Hit. That's number one in the NFL. And he's getting, he plays exclusively on the left side, which will put him up against Penei Sewell all day. So you're going to have the best pressure producer in the NFL versus the best offensive lineman in the NFL. And that'll be a really fun matchup to watch. On the other side, Will Anderson is typically the guy that would go up against Taylor Decker, but he left last week with an ankle injury and was not able to return and then has not practiced. And it's starting to look like he might not play. This is a guy who typically plays about 80% of the snaps. So that's a huge loss for them. He has, he's fourth most in pressures this year with 40. So of the team's 137 pressures, 97 of those 139 or 137 all come from those two guys, right? Ooh. So if you take Will Anderson out of the equation, it's a big loss for them. Like big loss. Like it, I don't know if you could, this is, it'd be the same as if they lost Stroud, in my opinion. If you lose Anderson, you have to turn to Derek Barnett. Derek Barnett has 9 pressures on the season, 9 games, 9 pressures. So highly, it's a big drop off. It's a big drop off between the two guys. Will Anderson's getting pressures on like 18% of his snaps. Barnett, 9. The time to pressure, or a time, it takes Will Anderson on average 4.4 seconds before he gets a sack. It takes Barnett an average of 6.1 seconds before he gets his sacks. So big drop off in how long it takes him to execute and the ability to execute in general. So Lions could be catching a massive break if Will Anderson is not able to go. So no Will Anderson could mean a lot of focus on Danielle Hunter. And like I said, he's up against Penei anyways. And if you can't get pressure from the other side, and you have the best offensive line in the league, this is what looked like it was going to be the premier battle, Lions offensive line versus Texans defensive line. It could get a huge swing in the Lions' advantage because of injury.
Formidable defensive line. Going back to the linebacker group, Azeez Al-Shaair and Henry 2020, those are the guys that are out there the most, right? If they're going to go with two linebackers. They also have Jake Hansen, Devin White, Jamal Hill, Neville Hewitt, and Delshawn Phillips.
2020 is a guy who plays the majority of snaps. Like, if he will be on the field pretty much all the time. And Al Shazier is the other one that should be on the field all the time. He has been injured, though, hasn't played in a couple weeks. He's returned to practice and has been limited this week, but it sure looks like they're expecting him to return. So if that happens, they're going to have their two best linebackers on the field. So that'll be really good for them if they can. Hansen has played well. Devin White is also on this roster, but he's not playing well. He's definitely he's not the starter he used to be in Tampa.
He's only like 26 years. He's not even an old guy.
Right. His play has just fallen off. Hewitt is he got a lot of snaps. Like with Al Shahir unavailable, Hewitt was the guy who played the majority of the snaps with in his place. I expect his snaps to scale back as with Al Shahir's return. We'll see if he's limited in any capacity. If he is, you might end up seeing Hewitt on the field a little bit more. Good linebacker group. They're at least average to above average. They can drop into coverage. They're athletic, so they can move pretty well sideline to sideline. The trick is going to be trying to get them to, trying to get them confused, trying to get them to figure out if they're supposed to be dropping or if they're supposed to be coming at the line of scrimmage, and then just trying to confuse them from there. So that'll be the trick. That'll be the trick is what can you do with these linebackers? Typically, you're going to see them drop in zones, and when that happens, they like to keep things in front of them, which means like if you're running across a route with Amon-Ra, Amon-Ra's got to keep his head active so that he's not looking at a linebacker too close to him. And but it's a good coverage unit, good four-man group that they use at the linebacker.
All right, going back to the defensive backs, the outside corners, Derek Stingley Jr. and Kamari Lassiter, with Chris Boyd, Kadar Hallman, D'Angelo Ross also on the roster, Jeff Okuda on IR. Sadly, we won't get to see him. The safeties, now Jalen Petrie, Jimmy Ward, Kalen Bullock, Eric Murray have all seen starts. They're all guys that play. They also have MJ Stewart, Miles Bryant.
Let's start with the corners. Stingley's one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL. He's a little bit of a down year, but he's still an incredible corner. Very tight. He's going to match up with somebody in one of the guys on the outside. My guess is they're going to put him on J-Mo. That'll make a really tough matchup. But I tell you what, if you're putting him on J-Mo, J-Mo's just going to run him all day long. And that's fine. That'll be a really good matchup to watch. But it's essentially going to be taking their best corner out of the play a lot of the time, just running him out of it. On the opposite side is Kamari Lassiter, second-round pick for them. Lassiter is, if you remember from our draft coverage, he's more of a zone corner. I thought would succeed more in his zone covers and more of a zone system, and he has, so he's doing better here. Starting for him, he may end up drawing like Tim Patrick then. If with him drawing Tim Patrick, that's a tougher assignment. Patrick's a lot, bigger, savvy veteran. Lassiter is more small and scrappy, but it'd be interesting to see how those two would pivot against each other. They use Petrie, their safety, as their nickel. So a la Brian Branch last year, he's the guy who's been pretty much on the field 85% of the time to all the time. So they essentially are running like three safety sets. Jimmy Ward is their primary starter, but he's been hurt. That's why Eric Murray has gotten the start. And then third round pick, Kalen Bullock has been the other starter. Bullock has some nice range. He's got some good speed, but you've got two rookies in this secondary. And as we've seen with Terrion, there's bumps that come along with these rookies. So there's opportunities to take advantage. Jimmy Ward looks like he'll probably be back. He's been limited this week as well. If he's able to return, that'll give them a little bit of a bump, but I think Eric Murray's played fine in his stay. But three safety sets, the Lions know how to beat that. And when you have these three safety sets, and you're asking Petrie to essentially cover Amon-Ra whenever they shift a man. It's a massive advantage for Amon-Ra. Now, Petrie is very flexible, and he's, you know, they can move him into different positions. He can play at linebacker, he can blitz, he can do a whole bunch of different fun things, which is nice for them. But he's going to have a hard time trying to handle Amon-Ra, which is why I expect to see more zone. If you give him more zone, you're going to see kind of like what you saw last week against the Packers. Lions are going to take what's there. If you decide to push your coverage towards Amon-Ra, then Goff's going to find some guys outside. If you push it and just try and play everyone equal, he's probably going to go to Amon-Ra. And the key will be, can the Lions offensive line hold off that pass rush? And if they can, Goff can just start picking apart at the zone. And they have good players. Don't get me wrong. I think everyone in their secondary is good. Maybe, I mean, Bullock can improve a little bit. He's, like I said, there's bumps with that rookie. Same thing with Lassiter. But it's a talented group. But I think the Lions have answers for what they do.
All right. Going to the special teams, the kicker for the Texans is Kaimi Fairbairn, who wasn't a great kicker when he was younger. The last couple of years, he's been very good, but he's kind of tailed off this year, where he's only made 21 of 25 field goals. Go ahead.
He missed two last game.
Right. So, you know, that interesting. Tommy Townsend's the punter, who had a really good season a couple of years, 3 years ago. He was, I think, a first-team All-Pro. He has decent numbers, you know, 46 yards per punt, very low touchback percentage. He's only had two touchbacks out of 41 punts on the year, puts about half of them inside the 20-yard line, so he's a decent punter. Return men for the Texans, Steven Sims gets the bulk of both the punt returns and the kick returns, but also Robert Woods and Damian Pierce have been in that mix.
Yeah, none of them are great.
No.
They're average to below. You know, I think Robert Woods is more your safety net. Like, we want to play it safe. Whereas Sims is the guy you're hoping to maybe get a little bit more juice out of. Pierce, I really like Pierce, but he's not going to play. It doesn't look like he's going to play. So, I'm not really worried about him on special teams. This is a team that will play for probably their special teams for points and field position.
Long snapper is John Weeks. Do you know anything about John Weeks?
No, I didn't look anything up on John. I've had a busy week myself here, so I haven't had a chance.
All right, there's your Houston Texans.
Yeah, Jeff Okuda, like you mentioned, he's at practice, but I don't think he'll be ready to play in time. So yeah, I do not think we'll get to see Jeff Okuda. It's a talented group that I think is not executing properly, right? They have big flaws on the interior offensive line. They have vulnerable flaws on the interior defensive line. The defense is keeping them in games, but the offense really isn't doing a bunch with it, right? And so some of that's on the play calling, some of that's on the offensive line, some of that's on execution, some of that is them not having a full complement of their roster. So it's going to be an interesting game to see. I believe I won last week.
Because I picked the Packers.
That's right. Joe, you got to turn it up, buddy. You're yeah, falling behind here.
Well, but there's a method behind my madness.
I'm going to stick with the Lions continuing to have large outputs. And I know the Texans defense. I know the Texans defense is good, like DVOA number two, right? Like, they can do a whole lot. But the Lions offense is producing, you know, over 30, you know, on average, they average 33 points a game. I don't know if I can necessarily go all the way up to 33, but I'll go to 31. And while I think the Texans have the opportunity to score, and they have the talent to score, I don't know if they're going to score more than 21. So I'm going to go 31-21, and I'm going to give you a big window to pick the Lions and try and beat me on the score, or maybe you want to stick with your other plan. That's fine too.
Yeah, but see, this is tough now, because now I'm digging myself a big hole, and as you know, this is a game I've been looking forward to. You know, once we saw the schedule come out, because they knew Houston would be good. This is kind of a big road test. It's going to be Sunday Night Football. I want it. They've been doing great when I've been picking against them, but the way you laid it all out there, like with the way they're playing, you know, they're really tough to beat right now, and yeah, it's not a full strength Texans team. And now I'm jinxing the crap out of them. But since you went 31-21 Lions, let's go 30-24 Lions.
There you go. Hey, that's a good score. That's a good pick. Hey, you got a good chance to win this. I don't know if the Texans are gonna they didn't score many points on the Jets, and I think the Jets are terrible.
The Jets have a good defense.
Yeah, but you know, maybe you can chalk that up to Thursday night. But
Thursday night is a rough game to play in.
But if you
I don't know, but the Texans have they don't have a ton of firepower, but they have enough there mm-hmm. where they can like sneak out a win. They do. They have enough.
Sure.
They have enough guy between Dell and Mixon and Stroud, and like Schultz can have like one of those big games. But you know, as you pointed out about Jackie, I don't know. It's the Lions have Jack Campbell and Brian Branch that they're going to be mm-hmm. matching up with Dalton Schultz. Like, I don't know. Everything points to a Lions win, but you know, the Texans do have some pieces where they could win that game. Taylor Decker doesn't play, or Danielle Hunter getting a couple sacks. Like we saw mm-hmm. Sewell get beat for a sack on Sunday. You know, he's not impenetrable.
He got tripped, but yeah, I agree. He could get tripped again.
Hey, anything happens in these games.
Texans scored 13 against the Jets. They needed a field goal to beat the Colts 23-20. Lost to the Packers on a walk-off field goal 24-22. Beat the Patriots, but who doesn't? They scored 40 against the Patriots. And they beat the Bills, which is their most impressive win of the year. But again, 23-20. The Texans was 24-20. Like, they don't score more than 24 points other than when they play the Patriots. In fact, they haven't scored more than 24 points. Oh, no, one. I'm sorry. Opening game, they scored 29. So I do think they have a ceiling, and maybe 24 points is that ceiling. I just don't know if the Lions are going to be held to 21. You know what I mean? Like, I think a 30-point, they've got 30 in them, even with a tough D in front of them. It's a defensive scheme you just faced. You have a terrific offensive line, best offensive line versus the best producing defensive line. And so that's really where this game's going to be won and lost.
Yeah. Well, obviously you're right when it comes to that. They performed well. I mean, I'm thinking about you. Stroud has the ability to run a bit, but they mm-hmm. held Kyler Murray in check, and I know Stroud's a better version of Kyler Murray, certainly, but
sure.
They are disciplined on defense and kept Murray in the pocket. They're probably going to try to do the same with Stroud, unless mm-hmm. I don't know, unless the stats show that no, he's less effective when he gets outside the pocket and throws. So let's you know, we'll see come Sunday, but yeah. Let's keep rolling. Let's get it to 8-1. We've never seen 8-1 in our lifetime, so it'd be something if they did it.
It's they're playing at a high level, and you know, I think eventually they'll have to slow down a little bit, but
they will lose again.
I don't think.
Although there's been a lot of 16-1 talk.
Yeah, well,
I mean, there's too many tough games left. They're gonna definitely lose,
but this,
two
this,
of them, if not three, you know.
This is a game that I don't think is as tough as when we saw it on the schedule initially, right? You know, that game last week was a tougher game, in my opinion, to have to go into Lambeau and the weather and
Elements.
yeah, and they weren't even bothered. They take your will to play right off the bat, and then they just beat you up.
Is this a,
And
could
I
this be a letdown game then? Could this be like,
no,
yeah, look what
Sunday
we did
night.
at Lambeau. This is a piece of
No,
cake, you know. We're gonna be indoors. We're used to be stadium was built right around the same time as Ford Field, so we're gonna be used to the stadium, you know.
the only game they've lost in prime time over the last year and a half was the Dallas game that they technically won, but Brad Allen
They didn't technically win
gave,
that.
oh no, that they won, that they should have technically won, that Brad Allen gave to the
Stop
Cowboys.
using technically. They were just screwed out of it. That's all. They still lost.
That was it. That was their only loss in prime time. So set them up in prime time again. I expect another win.
Well, I hope you're right. Looking forward to it. Should be a good one. Movement on the Apple Podcasts app. No new written reviews. So if you guys feel like leaving one, please leave one. Spotify, we've got a couple more reviews. So hey, that's great. Everybody, thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for providing reviews and giving us 5 stars. And even if you don't, if you hate the show and want to write about it, go right ahead.
Thanks for listening, though.
Yep. It's always appreciated.
Even if you hate it, we still appreciate
I
you
hate listening.
turning it on.
Don't know, do you
I
have
don't
anything else?
I definitely don't want to talk about my football, my college
And
football.
neither would I. That, I guess that's it. We brought it into the show this year. We kind of
we
left it
cur
out of
we
all the
we
other years, except for we would talk about the Michigan State game. Now we brought it in a little bit. Now it's like, ah, forget it.
We broke it. We broke them. We broke
Yeah,
our
yeah.
teams.
Well, mine was already broken. You've been piecing it together, and it's starting to crumble again, but.
Well, I'm excited. I think late games are always tough. I mean, personally, they're tough because it's tough to get
Well, at least
articles
you're
out,
not
right?
there.
Yeah. Oh,
You're going
gosh.
to be at
Yes,
least
I
be
know.
home.
That's
Unless you're getting on a
accurate.
plane on Sunday.
No,
Then
I am
tell me.
not. I have done that. I have done the
You went to San
late
Francisco. You
game,
went to L.A.
and then to try and make it back. Like I've done the
Houston's
red
not so
eye.
bad, though.
No,
It's a
not at
shorter
all. But
flight. It's only like two and a half hours from here.
I did the red eye from back from LA. That was rough. And then I did the next morning with San Fran, which was a little better, but then I hit delays and stuff like that, which in O'Hare, the Chicago Bears were definitely working the terminal
Holding
that
you
day.
down. Yep.
Yeah, I'll be happy to watch from home, and I can at least go to bed at a reasonable hour instead of worrying about travel. That's gonna be a tough travel day. And then, look, they've got an interesting schedule coming up, right? Because you got 2 1 o'clock games after this, after Sunday Night Football, you got 2 1 o'clock games, and then it's Thanksgiving, there's Thursday Night Football with the Packers, 5:25 with Bills, 1 o'clock at Bears outdoor in the elements. At San Fran on Monday night,
Monday Night Football.
and then the Vikings game in the final week is to be determined. I know that there's an
Could be
option.
Sunday Night Football if it's for the division championship or something.
Right. I don't expect it to be, but
No,
yes,
hopefully
absolutely
not,
could.
but potentially.
But
Or if the
I
Vikings are trying to make the playoff, there could be
mm-hmm.
many scenarios out there where
Certainly.
it
Yeah, if
could
you're looking
be
for
like a Sunday Night
fighting for
Football
number
game.
one, yeah, if you're fighting for number one seed,
Yeah,
yeah.
well, not that. They wouldn't put they wouldn't put that at, have we had that
No,
recently?
if the Lions were fighting for number one seed and the Vikings were fighting to get in,
Okay, yeah,
then
then you could see it
that
being
would be,
yeah,
yeah.
Sunday Night Football. Yes.
So I was looking at that game because that game actually has the opportunity to be flexed to Saturday as well. But with the Lions playing on
Monday
Monday
night.
night the week before, there's no way they're going to flex that to Saturday, right? Like
I wouldn't think
that
so.
would be unreasonable. So I do expect that to be Sunday. I just don't know when. We'll figure that out. It'll probably be a 1 o'clock and everybody will be happy. And we can be rested, looking forward to a bye in the wild card, hopefully.
All right, that wraps it up for us. So everybody, enjoy the Texans game this Sunday, and we will see you next week. And until next time, let's go Lions.